was so tight and slippery, they called it the vagina. the actors called it the vagina.
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
Holly was right. Warm Caverns was a tourist trap.
Don't try and pin this fucking shite on me.
This is not caving. This is an ego trip.
Come on, Rebecca. I didn't know this was going to happen. This is exactly what we believe in. We've always said if there's no risk, what's the point?
Well, don't try and justify this.
Where are we? It hasn't got a name. It's a new system. I wanted us all to discover it.
Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Recotopia, episode 37. I'm Chris Atkinson.
I'm Jeremy Scott.
And, JC, always asking if those Titans have it together yet. Well, they've won four in a row, but they still haven't gotten it together yet, in my opinion.
I agree.
At least they're not the Colts, I guess.
At least they're not the Colts.
Yeah, and until they can score, they scored 20 points in the second half all season, the Titans. 20
That's
points
not good.
In the second half all season. They need to start ramping that up. Anyway, enough sports talk. How are you guys doing out there in the chat? Once again, we have a lot of familiar faces and everything on Twitch and YouTube, and Shireen asks us, how are you both doing today? I'm doing great. How about you, Jeremy?
I'm doing well. I'm excited. I've got a lot of fun stuff in the prep here that we're going to talk about today.
Okay. Do you want to kick us off with some recommends?
It's no big deal.
Itty bitty living space.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
Recently released on Hulu, an original film called Rosalind.
Okay.
This is Caitlin Dever, who I seem to recommend every other week on this show, something she's in.
Yep.
She's just awesome. She can do drama and she can do comedy. This is comedy. This is PG-13, modern language, but period setting. So think like A Knight's Tale, I guess, in terms of tone overall. She's Romeo's girlfriend, and Romeo says things to her that are straight from the play that he will later say to Juliet, like the stars are your eyes and all this stuff. And he's just a dumbass Casanova in this movie. And she can't make it. She doesn't make it to a party where she's supposed to meet up with him. And it's, of course, the famous party from the movie, the mask party. And he ends up meeting Juliet. And so she goes to see him and finds him saying all the same things to Juliet that he said to her, and she gets mad and decides to do revenge. And the way that it plays with the original is very similar to Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, in that a lot of things that happen in this movie are things that happen in the play, but they happen for totally different reasons in this movie, or different motivations.
Yeah.
If you like her, then absolutely, 100%. If you like Booksmart, this is the lead girl from that. Watch this movie. You will love it. she carries it. Everybody else is pretty good. Bradley Whitford plays her dad. It's just charming. It's just charming as hell. They use a lot of modern language. There's an F-bomb. There's a shit. But they also speak... Like, it's at one point where she's writing a series of letters to Romeo and he's not responding. And you hear her voice narrating the letters. And she's like, why do you not respond? Have you run out of quill ink? it's just humorous in every way that it can be. I can't recommend this movie enough. It's called Rosalind and it's on Hulu. It's only on
All
Hulu.
Right. Okay. All right. All right. I haven't even heard of this, but this sounds amazing.
Yeah, I remember reading a year or two ago that Caitlin Dever signs on to play a third wheel to Romeo and Juliet in a new adaptation, and I kind of rolled my eyes because I thought, we don't need another adaptation of Romeo and Juliet, but this kind of goes the other way and skewers every moment of that play. And it's really fresh. I thought it was really funny.
All right. Awesome. I ventured out to the multiplex a week or so ago and took in the movie Barbarian. I had heard quite a bit about it. Like people, I can't remember if people were raving about it or if it was one of those where it was like got a lot of raves early on and then people started seeing it and like, it's not that good or whatever. But I really enjoyed this. This movie stars Georgina Campbell as this woman who is coming into Detroit to apply for a job, interview for a job with a well-known documentary filmmaker. She goes to an Airbnb that is out in the middle of basically what I guess is just a dead neighborhood of like homes that don't really exist anymore, but except for this one that is being used as an Airbnb. And she goes to the door and she tries to find the keys and the keys aren't there. And then she's like, well, I guess I'm gonna have to call the owner of this place or whatever. And can't get a hold of him, but then sees a light come on in the house. And she goes to knock on the door and there's Bill Skarsgård, saying that he has rented out the Airbnb and that it, you know, I don't, what are we going to do here? So he, to be the nice guy, eventually says, hey, why don't you just stay here? I'll sleep on the couch. You can take the bedroom. We'll sort this out tomorrow. Yeah. So a lot of this seems very creepy and weird and eventually she does. And it starts off a lot like, you know, something where you really feel like, you know, where this is going, right? Like, cause Bill Skarsgård's gotta be a creepy guy or else he wouldn't do all this type of stuff. And then she goes to sleep at night and suddenly hears her door open and she wakes up and she's like, she gets out and she finds Bill Skarsgård on the couch. He's sleeping, but he's making noises. He's like mumbling in his sleep. He's like, what is this? Well, there's a little bit of an argument that happens. She accuses him of maybe possibly opening her door in the middle of the night. He denies it. But then she goes back to sleep. The next morning, there's a note waiting for her saying, Bill Skarsgård says, I'm going to go out and get some groceries or something like that. And she goes off to do her interview. And this movie takes a turn. I'm not sure I want to entirely divulge what happens after this, but this movie does take a turn at some point where they find more parts of the house to explore. And this house has dimensions that they did not realize when they walked in. And at some point there's a cutting point where where the movie splits into basically two halves, and Justin Long becomes our main character. And Justin Long is a character who is playing an actor who has just recently been accused of being sexually aggressive on a set, and he's about to get canceled and he's about to get, he's going to get arrested. He's going to go to jail, all this type of stuff. He flees Hollywood and he goes to Detroit, where he just so happens to own this house that the Airbnb is, you know, where the Airbnb is. And he goes there and starts trying to figure out what is he going to do. Now he tells his best buddy, who's like, come on, bro, you can tell me what really happened with that girl, blah, blah, blah. And of course he tells a bullshit story where he's not 100% clean, but he's really not any percent clean. You can tell by the way he tells the story that he did the things that the woman accused him of. But he goes back to the house figuring out, well, how am I going to get money? And so he's going around the house trying to look for stuff. And he finds out, this is a pretty humorous section of the movie where he finds all the stuff that Georgina Campbell and Bill Skarsgård found in the earlier part of the movie, and is like, oh wow, more square footage for this house that I can sell. And he's going through all this scary ass shit with a tape measure. There is something else going on in the house that I have not revealed, of course, because I want you to know, I want you to figure this thing out for yourself, but it's going to make you sit there and wonder for a while. Then you're going to be like, oh shit. Okay. That's more information, but now what the fuck? So you're going to do that a bunch. And this movie is pretty genuinely scary, and it has some pretty good social commentary to it. And overall, a really satisfying horror movie, I would say. So it's a completely different one. You always got to give points to the movie that makes you think it's going one way, and it never goes the way you think it's going to.
Yeah.
Never goes that way. You're always like, oh, okay, this is the movie where the movie does this. And it's like, nope, not doing that. So
yeah, that's always awesome.
So I highly recommend Barbarian. Hope other people, I can talk to other people about this soon, because it's a discuss worthy movie.
All right.
So anyway,
that's awesome. Mm-hmm. For my second recommend, I'm going to give you a couple of tools that you may well know about, but you may not. And just in case you don't, I'm going to give them to you because I do a lot of writing. I write a lot for YouTube videos, and I write a lot of books and short stories and two websites that I visit that are free resources that I find invaluable that I'm probably on every single day. The first one you may know about, thesaurus.com.
Yep.
Because we all have words that we lean into a little more than we should. The other one, as the graphic shows you, is rhymezone.com. Mm-hmm. Now, this comes in super handy for the YouTube videos that we write, because a lot of times we do rhyming-based jokes or alliteration. But I use both of these websites for the videos and for my book writing. And if you do any kind of writing or want to, this will greatly expand your arsenal of words and eventually your vocabulary at the ready. I've been using them for years. I don't think I've ever talked about them much, but rhymezone.com, thesaurus.com.
I also use these quite a bit. There have been some times where I've been writing scripts, though, and you're like, all right, I need to come up with that perfect like other word for this so that I can get a rhyme or a pun or something like that in. And man, some words just aren't rhymeable. Some words just aren't thesaurusable. But for the most part, it's a huge help, because a lot of times you do sit there and you wear out the same word quite a bit, or you need a rhyme and you can't come up with one, and it gives you all the different syllables and all that. Like, you know, it's like a two syllable, a three syllable, a four syllable. So I really do enjoy those sites, and happy to hear that you use them as well.
I love Rhyme Zone because it'll give you in bold the really accurate rhymes, but then it gives you in unbolded text kind of like Eminem rhymes,
right? Like, right, yeah,
where he rhymes orange with porridge. It'll give you kind of those similar rhymes. So man, I feel like whatever you write, these two websites would be really helpful. So there you go.
I opened up Shudder a few days ago to watch. I was looking for just anything, basically. So like, give me something. I want to get something that's, you know, pretty highly recommended. And one of them that had five red skulls on it, I was like, ooh. Oh yeah. But the IMDb is a 6.5, but you know what? In horror land, a 6.5 is pretty damn good. It's called Bloody Hell is what I ended up picking out here. And this is an interesting story. It's somewhat horror, I guess, but for the most part, the main character, Ben O'Toole, finds himself in at a bank, and he's about to flirt with this cashier that he likes and everything. And just as he's about to start his flirtations, the bank gets robbed. People come in with guns. There's like five or six of these guys. While he's hiding and while he's waiting to get his wallet stolen, he's ready to just, you know, he's just sitting there. He has this sort of like this I don't know, this doppelganger guy that's in his head that talks to him. It's him, doppelganger. It's really him. It's to the guy playing two roles, essentially, who's telling him, hey, kill them all. You know, just kill him. And so he manages, there's a gun, I think, in one of these handbags that just happens to be next to him. And he pulls out a gun and he shoots the first guy. And then he just goes on a rampage. The next scene we see is he's in court, because an innocent person did get killed during his heroic attempt to save everybody. So he's getting blamed for this innocent person getting killed. And so he has to spend 8 years in prison because of this. And when he gets out, he's a pseudo celebrity who has paparazzi following him around and everything. And he just wants to get away. While he was in prison, he used some sort of spitball tactic at a map to try to find some place that he would like to go when he gets out of jail. And Finland kept coming up every time he spits over there. So it's Finland he ends up going to. But he notices that there's people following him around when he goes to the airport, and he doesn't know what it's all about, but he's a pseudo celebrity. So people have interest in him and he just figures it's part of the territory. But then when he lands in Finland, he gets kidnapped and he is taken to this house where when he wakes up, he is missing part of his leg. And he's
Jesus
hanging,
Christ.
And he's hanging from a basement and he's just, you know, has just like ropes tied around his wrists and everything. He quickly finds out he is in this house with this family, who have been killing people to feed their monster son, basically, is what it is. They have a somewhat normal looking family, but there's this one member of the family that they do not show at any time during the whole thing. We just hear growls and yells and stuff like that all the way throughout. One day, one of the smaller children comes down to the basement to see the person that they have hanging up in their basement, and he gets a little bit too close, and our hero of the story grabs him with his legs and holds him hostage until somebody can come down and try to save him, and then he can use that as leverage to get out. There's a funny little conversation he has with himself in the basement where he's talking about, like, it's like, how did the guy in Misery get out of his situation? And he goes, well, he wrote the book that Annie wanted, and he could always hold that book in as leverage for insurance if she ever tried to kill him and everything. And he goes, so the guy in his mind is like, well, we need to get some insurance. He's like, he ends up killing her hitting her over the head with a typewriter or whatever, and that's how he gets out at the end. And he goes, well, we need to get something for some insurance. And the guy's like, yeah, and we need a typewriter. So anyway, the only other woman of the house, a young woman who's like, her name is Alia, comes down when he's got this kid in a leg lock or whatever. She doesn't really believe in the thing that the family's doing with the feeding people to their brother and everything. So she has a soft spot for him, and wants to help him escape, but she's afraid that if she helps him escape, that they'll both be in trouble. And that's basically the premise of this movie. It's really funny. And there's a couple of gross moments in here, but overall, I think this is a fun movie. I think you would like this, Jeremy. You may, okay. I may have done a terrible job describing it for you. But I think you would actually like this. The dialogue that he has with himself in this movie is the fun part of the whole thing.
Okay.
So I think you would like that.
I will put it on the list. Absolutely. It sounds intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Bloody hat.
Yeah, and then we have Patrick even says, yes, bloody hell is awesome, he says.
That's two opinions I trust.
Yeah. But I may have botched. When I talk about these movies, I don't want to give away. I want you guys to have the surprise that I have when I'm like watching it, you know? And so a lot of times I'm sitting there describing a movie and I'm like, I don't want you to know that. I don't want you to know that. So, and then I end up thinking, well, maybe I undersold it by the end. Anyway.
Oh, you made it sound very interesting. So,
okay, good. All right. Well, are you ready for the big recommend?
Let's do the big. I'm ready.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
All right. So today's big recommend is The Descent. And, you know, it's funny. I meant to go and watch the, alternate ending to this movie that everybody told me was better, but I didn't get around to seeing the alternate ending. From what I understand, it's different in that it's like kind of we find out it's been a vision the whole time. It's been like a dream or something like that.
No, not quite. I actually think the alternate ending, I haven't seen it. I read what it is, and I think it's way better than the ending we get. The ending we get, I mean, if you're listening to the show, you either have seen the movie or you don't care about being spoiled. The ending we get, she gets out, right? And passes out. And then she's alive, right? In the extended ending, after she's like rescued or whatever, she wakes back up in the cave and her rescue and getting out was a vision. And then she hears the crawlers coming towards her and it goes to credits. Which I think would have been a much more satisfying ending, but they were concerned that US audiences would find it too depressing.
Yeah.
Because go ahead.
May have even gotten test screened or whatever, and that's how they. I don't know. Maybe they just thought that on their own that it's just too depressing.
There's only two options: either they massively underestimate American filmgoers' appetite, or American filmgoers are pansies and can't handle a down ending.
I guess we've seen so many different kinds of movies. I don't know why like one movie decides, well, we have to have this ending, like, you know. We can handle it, guys. We can handle it. Anyway, the movie is part, you know, there's in parts deliverance in this. There's in parts. I even heard a score that sounded like The Thing going through this, that dun-dun-dun-dun sound, whatever. But anyway, this is about a bunch of women who all have the thirst to go caving, and most of them want to go to something that's reasonably safe, right? They don't want to go to the touristy one either. So they want to do something that's somewhat difficult, but not have a bunch of people around and all of that. But they enlist this girl Juno to find the cave for
them. AKA the devil.
Yeah, she is the devil in this, and we kind of know early on, if you've ever seen a movie before, you know that there's something between her, and we know that there's something between her and her best friend's husband in this. There's like some meaningful looks, some weirdness. He's acting strange on the way home from this whitewater rafting trip. She even says, boy, you're acting strange just before yet another horror movie starting off with a big wreck.
I was going to email you and ask if this was on purpose because I was like, what, again? Come on.
Yeah, this is almost exactly what The Changeling does, only it's the mother who survives. And instead of, instead of finding another house, rented out by a historical society, she just goes caving with her best friends. That's what she does. Mm-hmm. It's been some time. I can't remember how much time she is in the hospital. She finds out her husband's dead. Her daughter's dead. Her daughter, who was just about to turn 5, is dead. There's a period of mourning, and I can't remember how long they say has passed between this time.
I'm not sure they do. I was looking for it, but I got the sense it was about a year, because they have these conversations like, how's she doing? Well, she's here. It still feels like it's a fresh memory. But yeah, I don't know that they said exactly.
Yeah. Well, they all, so whatever, it's time for them all to come together and have a big moment. And Juno, really for reasons probably more personal than what she says they are, she picks this cave that they all think is this sort of touristy cave that people go to and everything. But they find out pretty quickly that this place, there's not really anything going on here at all. When they get, there's a point where they get trapped in this cave, and they're like, you put in a report that we're coming to this cave, right? And he says, well, this isn't the cave that you all wanted to go to. It's like, she is an absolutely infuriating person who is, whose motives are always like, you know, what is she trying to do here? She's trying to like cleanse herself of guilt. What is she trying to do throughout this whole movie? Juno is kind of the devil in this movie. There's not any, like, it doesn't seem like there's any redeeming qualities about her by the end of this movie. But this movie doesn't get right into the horror right away. The horror kind of is just the things that they have to do, especially if you're not experienced cavers, which I would never do any of this shit that's in this movie at all, ever. Would never be in this situation.
No.
That where there's a point where they have to go across this huge cavern that's like got this tremendous drop. It's funny. They already know it's a steep drop. They know that it's not one that you'd want to fall down, but somebody throws a rock down in it anyway, and it takes like 10 seconds for the rock. You hear the sound. And she goes, thanks a lot. I needed that or whatever.
Thanks for that. That's awesome.
There's a point where, is it Juno that takes charge on this? Juno like goes up to put all the little, pitons, or who is it? Who else was it? One thing that bugs me about this movie. I mean, you have to keep it dark and everything, but the characters are not like, Juno's the last one. But somebody goes across and starts sticking all these pitons in the like the rock, and then like puts a rope across. Then, you know, and then they can all slide across. They can all like rope themselves over to the other side and everything. During the middle of this climb, one of the women sees an old one that's there. And that's scary enough that you see like this old one that you think is an abandoned cave or whatever. But they've quickly come to realize this is probably 100 years old. It's not, you know, it's probably nothing recent, but this pisses off Juno because that means somebody who's gone into this cave before has already been here and has already named it. And I wanted to name it for myself.
God, I hate her so much.
So they get across there, and then there's a point where they have to go through this like very narrow tunnel, which in the trivia section, apparently it was so tight and slippery they called it the vagina. the actors called it the vagina. I love that. They have to crawl through this thing, and like, seriously, Jeremy, I know you're a lot like me when it comes to stuff like this. There's so much nope going on in this movie. So much nope. Like, can I just lie down and not and you know, whatever, and just you guys can like find somebody to save me later?
Dude, sleeping in the cabin, it is a nope for me, man. Looks like Spider Haven. Like, let's say nothing of the caves.
Yeah. They try to go through this narrow tunnel, and there's a point where Sarah, the main character of this movie, gets stuck. And then there's like, you know, an attempt to try to get her to calm down because I guess there's some sort of claustrophobia or something going on there. And then they find out that it's they hear some rumbling and they know that there's a cave in about to happen. They have to get out to the other side before it's too late. And then that cave in happens. Now they like, well, now we're fucked. Where do we go now? That's the only place we could even, you know, is there another opening out of this place? We don't know.
Is there air? You don't know.
Yeah. Is there air? You don't know. So yeah, that it's all like, okay, where are we going to go next? We're going to, and they're having, that's the whole horror of this first part of this movie is, are they going to be able to find a place to get out of this thing? Like, that's scary enough. What are they going to have to navigate to get to that place? Because it's for most part, what it seems like, an unexplored cave. So like, there's not any like real way to, there's not anything mapped out for them to know. Not too long though, we start seeing hints of other creatures being running around in this cave. There's a point where Sarah shines a light down and sees one of these creatures way far down in the distance, and a creature scurries off and runs away. And she says that she sees something. Of course, Juno says, "You didn't see anything because I'm Juno's the devil. Secretly the devil in this movie." Yeah, exactly. And I fucked your husband. There's a point though where this is one of the best sort of scary reveals there's ever been in a movie. And I remember this was when I was living in New York. This was one of my favorite things to walk into because to see crowd reaction is when they're shining that light around, and then we just kind of get a glimpse of one of those creatures behind them, right behind them as they're walking around. It's one of those it's just a stunningly scary moment because it's a jump scare, but it's a well done jump scare to see something like that. Cause you're always kind of expecting it, but there's no sound there's nothing that like tips you off to when it's going to happen because so much doesn't happen in the way of like real horror stuff, like regular horror stuff that you're always expecting to just kind of always be towards the edge and never get to see the creature. And then finally it's on. Creatures are attacking. They have adapted. They have evolved to be able to not only just go around this cave blindly, but they can also climb all over the place just using their hands and feet and stuff. And they are horrifying, ghoulish looking things that are probably the result of many years of inbreeding and things of that nature. We're in the Appalachians. I don't think that's I don't think that's very subtle at all. We are definitely seeing like creatures who are forms of inbreeding here that have gone so far that they are now just like barely human. Them trying to survive these things all the way through. And then of course there's some revelations yet to be uncovered throughout this. Sarah doesn't know about the cheating yet, but she's gonna find out through a very weird way, a very weird, strange way, where she has the one of the other friends has like a token of some sort that her husband gave Juno, and it has this inscription on it. She ends up like, yeah, Juno at one point, like, is killing all these, like, creatures down below. And then suddenly one of the friends sneaks up on her. I don't know why you would do this in the middle of a rampage like this, but like runs up to her. And then she turns around and stabs this woman in the neck. And she didn't know it was her friend, but like at the same time, why are you coming up on her like that while she's battling all these dudes? My God, that was like crazy. But, there's some revelations to be had and some reckonings to be had and everything. Anyway, it's very scary fun. I don't like all the flash cutting of editing that goes throughout this, but for the most part, this is a great movie.
I appreciate a movie that has the courage to wait until halfway through to even tell me it's a creature feature. Like, mm-hmm. this movie sets up as though the claustrophobia and the getting out of the cave is the horror. And mm-hmm. then it gets bloody as hell. Like, I was shocked how much blood this movie has. Like, and then Sarah falls into a pool of blood and stands up out of that pool. And I was like, even more blood. There's mm-hmm. so much blood. I did a lot of reading on the trivia section. Sounds like you did too. I appreciated that this guy went full Saving Private Ryan with his cast and mm-hmm. kept the people who played the crawlers, whom he insisted be real actors and not stunt people. He wanted mm-hmm. them to develop characters. He kept them separate from the female cast, even during lunch. And the girls never knew what the creatures even looked like until they shot that first scene where they get attacked. And they were so scared, they screamed and ran out of the cave, and they were laughing by the time they hit the entrance. there's a lot of interesting things about the making of this movie, but he said The Thing is one of his main influences when he was making this. This guy's had an interesting career. This is Neil Marshall. He directed two of my favorite Game of Thrones episodes.
He's
been doing mostly TV, good TV, since the mid-2000s. He's done Game of Thrones, Constantine, Hannibal, Westworld, Lost in Space on Netflix. And then he did that Hellboy movie that was not very well received. But I appreciated the care he took, and I think that is why this movie is good. It's not just, let's just do a cave slasher. There was a lot of thought put into it. Each of the women is from a different country. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen many movies like this. It made my eventual double feature choice difficult. but yeah, I loved it. I've only seen it twice now, but I had forgotten almost all of it.
Yeah, same here.
How bloody it was.
I had only seen it when it came out, and I just remember it being really good. And it had over the years, it's built up quite a following too. So I was glad to get back to it. The biggest thing for me that bothered me a bit is we're already in the dark. It's already hard to see. There were so many cuts in the battle scenes and this and everything. And it's like, sometimes where you're just like, there's not a need for this shot that you just inserted right here. There's no need for any of this. It's sort of a small qualm overall, because I like everything leading up to it. But once it starts getting, a little bit furious in the action and everything, it's like, oh God, cut.
Yeah.
Apparently he did a movie called Dog Soldiers before this, that was an all male cast. And when The Descent came up, he was thinking of having like male and female all the way through, but like his agent or somebody said, why don't you do all female in this one? This would be like just a counter punch to your last movie that you did. So that's what he ended up going that way. Of course, there is one male character, and he is an asshole and is dead in the first 5 minutes. So,
well, and it's his fault, man. He's looking at her and not the road for like 8 full seconds as the car drifts over. And then the oncoming driver is clearly not paying attention because they just stay exactly where they are. Or he deserved that copper rod through the head.
I would say so. Every time I see a wreck like this in movies, I'm like, is this how these things happen? I mean, I'm sure that there are some wrecks that happen this way, but it seems like there's this complete lack of awareness at all on some of these things by both parties. Like you said, like the other guy isn't looking either. He's just kind of like doo 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 doo.
Yeah, seriously. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Man.
Looking in the chat, some people are talking about the unearned jump scares that are in this. I think the movie does kind of, once that reveal happens, And it's just all a bunch of it. Once it starts getting into the, you know, the fighting and everything, that's where it's kind of like loses a little bit of steam for me. Maybe it gathers steam for some of you, but I don't know. It's the only part of the movie. Is that what you got? Is that how you came out of it?
Yeah.
It was like I loved the stillness and quietness of that first 50 minutes or so, and enjoyed the mystery of what those creatures were. And then once it starts getting into that, you know, frenzy, it's like, oh, okay, well, this is a completely different mood, you know? So
it absolutely is. I love movies that give you two movies in one, especially when you don't see the turn coming. I remembered there was something creature-ish coming this time, but the first time through, there's no reason for you to think there's going to be fucking horrific vampire looking blood sucking creatures down there. Yeah. Cave is plenty scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Now are you ready for the secret double feature for this?
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
I'm not ready. I told you it'll probably end up at the outtakes, but I told you before the show that I had a list of like 11 or 17, a big long list of possibles, because this movie is so unique that I could look for survival type adventure goes wrong movies. I could look for bloody horror creature movies. I could look for something that has supernatural elements or something that doesn't. Look at all these suggestions. The one that I want to do is a little too on the nose, but I'm still going to do it because I think it's the right answer. And that's Alien.
Okay.
Because you have a group of people going to do what they believe to be one task. They find something supernatural. It turns into a horror movie about partway through with creatures that are scary. And there's somebody in the main cast, AKA Ian Holm, who is not telling the whole truth to everybody else about what's going on. And then there's also only one survivor at the end. And so for all those reasons, I really feel like Alien is the perfect matchup. I wanted to go with Wrong Turn because of that whole inbred thing, and the first Wrong Turn movie is fairly similar in that it's just these kids trying to have an adventure, and they take a wrong turn, and inbred hillbillies who kill people. But I really do think that Alien is the best double feature for this movie, and it matches up a lot of different ways: female empowerment. So Alien, that's my super secret.
I like it a lot, and I like your reasoning behind it. It seemed like in this era there were a lot of this what I would call redneck horror, where you had Wrong Turn, and you had the Hills Have Eyes remake, and it was just like every horror movie was like everybody's going out to the countryside, and guess what? They're not too happy to see city folk wandering around out here, and they will kill you because of it.
Yes, indeed.
There was a lot of that going on back in this era. But all right, well, what is next week's homework?
All right, everybody, we're going to one of my favorite 2001 movies that people I know have mostly never seen. It's called The Score, and it stars, I'd argue, four of the greatest actors of all time: Robert De Niro, Ed Norton, Marlon Brando, and Angela Bassett. There are other people in this movie. They don't matter. These four are doing the heavy lifting. And this is a heist movie. This is Frank Oz directed this movie, of all people. And De Niro is a proper thief. He lives, I think it's Montreal where this movie is set. And he lives, you know, a nice life. He runs a jazz club. He doesn't steal from his own town. He doesn't get caught. You could make a case that this is the same character from Heat, only in an alternate universe where he never got caught and shot at the end, because he's that smart about how he goes about heisting. And Ed Norton is this guy at a museum who has found something he wants to steal, and Brando hooks them up together, and they come up with a plan. That's all I'm going to tell you. If you have Stars, this is where you can watch this for free. Then if you have premium subscriptions at Roku, Hulu, Sling TV, Amazon Prime or Philo. Philo. You can watch it for free on all those, but those would have to be premium subscriptions, which I think means you're paying extra to have stars through those subscriptions. This is a great movie, and I can't wait to talk about it.
All right. Awesome. I have never seen The Score. I know that surprises you, but I have never seen it. So, I'm looking forward to this, because I have never seen this, and I've heard many people over the years say that they liked it. So I'm down with it. And yes, Obina's like, excellent. Non-horror. Yes. We're out of the October horror stuff, now. So we're going to be, recommending more non-horror stuff out of this next few months. And I'm happy to have gone through a horror month, though. I really enjoyed it. Now to move on, we go to stuff that's not horror, and I'm all about it. All right, do we have any questions?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do, and we in fact have time for a question or two.
Question.
I got something to say.
I want the truth.
I am listening.
I don't know why I just turned into Dr. Seuss. What is the most famous movie that you have physically visited a set location for? Excluding Washington, D.C., which I think is weird and unfair. What do you say?
Chicago, a lot of different spots where The Dark Knight was shot. Very familiar places in The Dark Knight. Especially the place where the mayor's office supposedly is. Like, that's one of the main, I think that's like one of the main centers of Chicago, is that place where they filmed that. You may know better than I do, but that like big plaza area where they usually have a big statue of some sort. I think that's where they shot that, that mayor's office thing where they hang the fake Batman from the thing and all that. And then there's like a whole bunch of other just different locations that you can see on the street during The Dark Knight that I've been through on that. There's a really unique building that's kind of like a parking garage. That's got that spiral looking thing that's in there. So like, a lot of, stuff there. That's probably the most famous, filming location, even though it's just the city. If you're in Chicago, you've been to that filming location. So.
Well, and one of my answers is Central Park, and I'm like, I've probably only been 300,000 or 400,000 movies that have a Central Park set. But for me, we ate, you and I, when we were in New York once, at Tavern on the Green, which is a restaurant right on the edge of Central Park that in the Muppets Take Manhattan, the Muppets go by outside that restaurant.
And Ghostbusters too, I think, right? Like one of those was not Ghostbusters. Maybe it's no, I think it is Ghostbusters. It
might be Ghostbusters.
Where Rick Moranis comes up to when he's being chased down by the Hound. And I think that may be it, but I'm not sure. Anyway, it's definitely Muppets Take Manhattan.
That's good stuff. And then again, you and I, most of my travel in the last 10 years has been with Chris. The Golden Gate Bridge and the Redwood National Forest that we got to see that appeared in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. So those are my answers. That's good stuff.
JC, in one of the questions asked, not The Last Castle, Chris, because I actually did physically visit that set. It's not a famous movie, though. It's the only reason there's a caveat in that question. Like, what is the most famous movie that you physically visited a set location for? But yeah, like The Last Castle, I was an extra on that movie for 7 days out of a 1 month in the summer of 2001, and that's at that Nashville prison that that's no longer being used here, but was once on the final list of being Shawshank prison. Some assholes in Ohio got it.
Bastards.
Let's do another question.
What movie did you love as a child, but you are too afraid as an adult to watch it because it might be terrible?
One movie that I haven't seen, I always talk about the movies that I used to see when we got HBO, and it was like the string of movies from 1984 that I remember watching a million times. Never Ending Story, The Natural, all those. One that I used to watch all the time that I haven't seen since the 80s is Cloak and Dagger. The Henry Thomas, like, this is, I don't know if this is his direct follow-up to E.T., but he's in it, and it's, you know, it's about a video game that's got like secret codes in it or some shit. And, I just remember like really enjoying it as a kid, but I have this fear that I will watch it, now and be like, oh, that's not a good movie at all or whatever. But I've ordered the 4K that's coming out for it. So maybe I'll realize when I will eventually watch this again and know.
Well, I have two answers. Only one I put in the notes because I'm lazy, but that one is Candleshoe. I'm pretty sure this is a fairly good movie. The internet seems to rate it at about 70%. Young Jodie Foster, David Niven, Helen Hayes. It's basically a family-friendly treasure hunt mystery. This girl goes to live with this rich family. I must have watched this movie 100 times when I was a kid. I had it on a VHS tape. I watched it over and over and over again, but I have not seen it since high school, maybe even before then. I have no idea. And then the other one that I haven't watched any even longer is Disney's The Black Hole.
Oh, like, yeah.
I adored that movie, but the internet tells me that I was wrong, and I haven't seen it in 40 years, probably. I was maybe 7. When I saw it, but I thought that movie was the bee's knees, and now I'm too afraid.
I don't think I've seen either of those movies.
I'm pretty sure our friend Jonathan has seen Candleshoe, but two very important movies in my youth. They were very important to me in my youth.
Yeah, a couple of them that are mentioned here in the chat. Josh says The Secret of Nim, which is another movie that I watched a million times back in the day. I have not seen it since the 80s, but that's the old Don Bluth stuff. But I get the sense that movie still holds up a little bit. Jagged says The Little Rascals. You mean that one in the 90s? Oh my God. I don't think I like that. I was like 17 when that Little Rascals movie came out. Was at a theater that played it. I don't remember it being very good. And plus, Donald Trump was in that movie. Short Circuit 2. Yeah. Unicorn. JC says, odd choice, but 1953's Titanic. I don't know if you're trolling.
Probably not. He's a Titanic buff. I'm sure he's seen it.
And then Nolan says, my favorite movie when I was a kid was Daddy Daycare, which I don't think I'm going to enjoy as much as an adult. Yeah. I saw this movie as an adult for the first time, and I was like, nope, I don't like that at all. Dark Crystal, maybe. Yeah. You know, weird. We sent Dark Crystal a few years ago, and like, that was the first time I had seen it since childhood or whatever. And I was like, this is still pretty good, but it's also not nearly as good as I remember. So,
All right. Let's do one more. JC Davis says that he was 100% serious about the
title. Okay, good.
Take one of your favorite movies. Sorry, producer, I skipped a question. It's my bad. Then ruin it with an era-specific recasting, cast, director, writer, score, whatever you want.
Okay. All right. So people who follow the ins and outs of us know our favorite movies. Mine is Back to the Future. So Back to the Future, starring Finn Wolfhard as Marty.
I love it already.
Now look. This doesn't mean I don't like these actors. I just think putting these actors in these roles would ruin the movie.
I get it.
Leonardo DiCaprio as Doc Brown. Ezra Miller as George. Timothy Chalamet as Biff. And Maddie Ziegler as Lorraine. Directed by Colin Trevorrow. Written by Aaron Sorkin.
my god.
Score by Hans Zimmer and Junkie XL.
That's the only one you had to say to really ruin it. Let's just put Junkie XL on there.
Yeah.
Oh, so, that was awesome.
There you go. Like, that's one of those. That's one of those that, like, I could see it where, you know, you have a producer situation where you get all the wrong people for everything, and somehow it turns into like this amazingness. But
okay. All right, I could do this question every week. My favorite movie, as you all know, probably, hopefully, is The Matrix. So let's ruin it slowly. First, let's put Will Smith in there instead of Keanu, as was originally almost the plan. Because I think that instantly makes that movie jokier. Let's cast Kevin Costner as Morpheus.
Yeah.
And then let's have Lena Dunham write it. Let's have Michael Bay direct it. Let's have Mumford and Sons do the score.
Oh my God. The Matrix written by Lena Dunham would like, and directed by Michael Bay. Like that.
I think they work well.
Wow. Like seriously. I'm speechless. I would wonder, like, Michael Bay probably doesn't, like, I don't know, does he doesn't adhere to the script that often, I wouldn't think.
That's possible.
So maybe he would take elements of it. I don't know. He would try to find ways to make it even worse, I guess. Take some of the worst tendencies of Lena Dunham and like amplify them even more, probably. Oh my God, this is, yeah, that's a wretched movie. That's,
I just love seeing Kevin Costner doing that whole speech about the Matrix that Morpheus gives about the real world versus
that would be insane. All right, maybe one more.
Yes, one more. Hang on one second. I didn't close my file. You can't prove anything. Let's just do that one we almost did. What live action movie?
You didn't see anything.
What live action movie would have worked better as an animated film?
Ready Player One, I think, would have been better. I think one of the things that I don't like about Ready Player One is that it's already trying to be animated in some ways because there's so much CGI thrown at you. With an animated version, you wouldn't have to worry about how things look like weird and CGI. You would just have it already animated and everything. And you would be able to do a lot more than you did in the movie, and you maybe adapt the book a little bit more faithfully than you did. I don't know. It feels like a movie that would be better as an animation. So
no, I think that's the great answer. I feel silly about mine now, but G.I. Joe. Any of those G.I. Joe movies. G.I. Joe,
sure. Why not? Yeah.
Because the action is ridiculous in those movies anyway. It started out as a cartoon, and I think Into the Spider-Verse has taught us that animated films can be mega hits. Mm. And so I know that Guillermo del Toro has said that his stop-motion Pinocchio that's coming up is meant to be for grown-ups to show that animation is just a medium. It's not specifically age group targeted. So I'm curious to see what he does with that.
That would be interesting. Yeah,
I agree.
All right. All right, everybody, this is going to be the end of this episode. Next week's homework is The Score. So yeah, looking forward to that. Thank you guys in chat once again for coming out and giving us your thoughts about things, and we really appreciate it that you come every week, and happy to see you every week. So
yep.
All right,
bye bye.
Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/CinemaSins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.
It says here that Kanye West because he lost his Adidas deal. Mm-hmm. He's lost his billionaire status. Mm-hmm. And listen, if you lose a deal for future money, were you really a billionaire in the first place? Like he achieved billionaire status, but only because he had some sort of long-term deal with Adidas, and certainly that money hasn't all been paid out yet.
Yeah.
And so now they canceled the rest of that deal, and he's not a billionaire anymore? I don't think he was in the first... He was a projected billionaire.
Right.
But not a billionaire, huh?
I'll get to it in a second. I can't really explain it right now.
That's all right.
It's a bunch of bullshit.
I've already proven to Aaron earlier that I can entertain myself. Let's talk about Leprechaun 3 some more.
Yes.
Man, I will tell you this. I still do not know what my double feature pick is going to be.
Okay.
I whittled a list of 15 down to 7.
Yeah, like every time, almost every time I'm done in here, I open up the door and Domino just comes in, doesn't even wait, just comes in. And I'll put my foot out sometimes and he'll just jump over it or something. And I'm like, okay, no, you're not going to be able to wander around in here. Sorry.
Negatory.
Mm-hmm. Weird happenings going on before the podcast.
Weird and wild stuff. Mm-hmm. It's weird and wild stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so at this point, I'm absolutely convinced that that rumor that Tom Brady had a deal to be traded to Miami is true.
Okay.
Because he looks miserable. He announces his unretirement, and then, like, I think a day or two later, that dude sues the Miami Dolphins for discrimination, and the Dolphins go under scrutiny. And that's when the rumor says that deal fell apart.
Hmm.
Shortly thereafter, Bruce Arians, I'm not going to coach anymore, but I'm going to be some kind of advisor who hangs around. Just it all felt like, and now he looks miserable, not just because they're playing poorly, but it just feels like that particular rumor has to have been true.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't think him unretiring ruined their marriage. I think it's the other way around. I think the marriage was over, and he said, I'm going to unretire and go play football.
Yeah.
I don't think a marriage of that... Well, I shouldn't speculate on other people's marriages, I suppose, but I don't think a marriage of that length that appeared to be that solid would break over one decision to unretire. It has to have been something that was building for a while,
yeah.
I would think.
Yeah, anyway, you would think.
I don't not enjoy seeing him play poorly. My wife and I were talking about Mike Birbiglia after we saw that show and about how hard it must be to not only keep a marriage healthy when you're on the road so often, but also how to keep your body healthy, you know, because he's not able to do fresh home-cooked meals. He's going to eat, you know, he's going to be in a hotel. He's probably going to get room service or go to the restaurant at the first floor of the hotel. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I just think it would be really hard. Football is only what, 9 times a year you're away from home at least.
Yeah.
But baseball, man, imagine being married to a baseball player.
I know.
You play for Minnesota now. God damn it. I'm allergic to snow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Preds sure suck.
Yeah.
Can we play all of our games in Europe? What sucks is that on paper, this is the opposite of what should be happening. And it, theoretically, maybe there's enough new people that they just need more time to gel. But
it's always too early to really
playing.
It's always too early to really tell. Just you never know. But it would be like it would be nice to see. You know at least the inkling that they're in every game and they're not just giving up stuff at the end and doing that thing where it's like a minute left in the period and they somehow just lose everybody who can shoot the puck at the goal at that moment. Like I bet the Predators don't give up any more last minute goals than any other team does, but it seems like it happens to Predators a lot.
I'm excited about this show. Man, this movie is fucking wild.
Yeah, it is.
I'll save it for the show, but I did not remember this movie. And I would have swore there was another movie that was kind of a thriller where a group of people went caving, mm-hmm. and I can't find it.
It's The Cave, I think. But the movie came out at the same time, like nearly the same time.
Oh, Cole Hauser. I was thinking it was Patrick Wilson, mm-hmm. and that's why I couldn't find this movie. Okay. Is that any good?
I can't remember. I don't remember it being very good, but
has anyone made like a lighthearted book about all of the pairs of Hollywood movies? Because they've been doing it for ages. We joked about it with Armageddon and Deep Impact, but Ants and Bug's Life and all that stuff back then. But they're two cave thrillers in the same year.
There's even some really weird. There's some really weird ones with some odd coincidences that happen too, like. You know, you had Truman Show and Ed TV, which, you know, Dennis Hopper was supposed to play Kristoff.
Right.
And then he ends up being in Ed TV. Then there's the two, in vitro fertilization, or the surrogate mother movies that came out with, you had the brother Solomon and you had Baby Mama. And
yeah.
Amy Poehler was in one and Will Arnett was in the other. They were married to each other at the time. And then you had No Strings Attached and Friends with Benefits, which had Natalie Portman in one, and it had it had Ashton Kutcher in one and had Mila Kunis in the other, ended up getting married together. And it also, Natalie Portman has a Mila Kunis connection too because of Black Swan, but like those two movies came out around the same time. So
weren't there two pre-Fontaine movies?
Yeah. Like one was with Jared Leto, and then was the other one
Billy Crudup?
Huh?
Was it Billy Crudup?
Billy Crudup. That sounds right.
Was the other one?
Sounds right. Yeah.
All right. Well, showtime. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go top off my tea.
All right.